Now, nowadays, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries or maybe a quarter of a tank of gas if you're lucky. You know what it will get you, though? For just $20 a month, you can get unlimited talk and text and plenty of 5G data from my cell phone company, Pure Talk. Make the switch today, and if you do it today, you save an additional 50% off your first month. They use the same 5G network, same cell towers as the big carriers, and most families saving close to $1,000 a month. Just go to puretalk.com/Sean, that's Sean, S-E-A-N. Make the switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. Hey, when you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about those out-of-pocket costs. Now, that can be a lot of money, but are your medical bills accurate? Now, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills actually contain errors. Now, HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, or fraud. Now, you can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Now, to date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Check them out online, healthlock.com. Go there today. Hey, Sean Hannity here. If you're in a situation where you feel threatened, well, instinct, that might drive you to reach for a lethal means immediately. But we all want to avoid the irreversible consequences of using deadly force. Now, enter the Byrner Less Lethal Pistol Launcher. It is equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammo. It can incapacitate any attacker for up to 40 minutes. It's legal in all 50 states. It requires no background checks, and it can be shipped right to your door. Go to their website, byrna.com/Hannity right now, and you'll get 10% off.
Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
Did you call her a narcissistic Looney Tune?
I am not going to comment on what I did or did not say back in the late 90s.
This woman, this little soft-spoken, pardon me for the phrase, dowdy woman, that was seen very unassertive, took a hold of my hand and squeezed it and said, do you understand everything that you do? I could have passed out at that moment. Mm-hmm. She was just holding on to my hand. She didn't, because I had started to turn away from her. And she held on to my hand and she said, do you understand everything that you do? I mean, cold chills went up my spine. That's the first time I became afraid of that woman.
People have been harassing my husband for, gosh, I don't know, ever since I've known him.
I believe she knew it. Just like I said, it was a political relationship that they had. It wasn't a normal, average marriage. She didn't even stand up for the women that knew what her husband did, and she knew what her husband did to those women. There's no way that she did not know that.
Here they come again. We're going to have to just ride through this as we have so many of these other false accusations.
There's been a lot of people that's come up dead in Arkansas, and I've had a lot of people ask me, aren't you scared for your life? And actually, I have been.
We will destroy you is what they said to me.
Who said?
My brother said it on behalf of Billy when he was campaigning for him in 1992.
I have to believe that it is in large measure motivated by people who just flat out disagree with the kind of politics and policies that my husband believes are best for America.
Bill, you're in any danger? And at this point, people
threaten
you?
Not anymore. I used to.
You used to think that you were in physical danger?
Really, really. Yeah, I was. I was very scared. I was horribly, horribly threatened. And people don't know that story.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that there are professional forces on the right at work for their own purposes and profit. There are just so many curious relationships among a lot of people and various institutes and entities. And I think that that deserves thorough investigation.
Why did you originally deny it, considering this was a legal matter?
Did you see what happened to Jennifer Flowers? Mm-hmm. Did you see what was happening to Paula Jones? Yes. No, not afraid. I just knew what would happen.
All right. That, of course, a montage of women. And yes, Hillary Clinton. Yes, her background. Yes. You know, at the end of the day, they were involved in smearing and slandering and intimidating and everything else. I mean, it's unbelievable. Anyway, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a... You know, there's nothing worse than before coming on the air than I have to deal with a bureaucratic snafu, to quote Al Gore. Which, you know what's amazing? You know, you live in your towns, you live in your communities, and you pay your taxes, you do the right thing. I'm a good neighbor. I try and shut up and leave everybody the hell alone. But you got these... I better shut up now before I upset my wife further here. It's not going to be good. So what I'm talking about, so remember during the debate, remember Hillary Clinton? Well, you called this woman, you love beauty pageants, Alicia Machado, Miss Piggy. Remember that? Came up the other night. Well, anyway, it turns out that there's a lot more to the background of this story. Apparently, this has now been in the works, a conspiracy, if you will, between a little nexus between media outlets and the Clintons and their campaign, that they wanted to hold this back and unleash this and dump this at the debate on Donald Trump with the hope that this would become the narrative. Now, there's a little itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy little problem, significant problem to all this story. Anyway, so she's been doing the interview circuit, getting suck-up interviews pretty much everywhere she has been. And actually, the only person that I thought asked pretty good questions of her was Anderson Cooper of CNN. And I've met him a couple of times. We've had a friendly relationship. He's a nice guy. No, honestly, he's been nice to me every time I've seen him. And, you know, I don't think any of these people in the media like me at all. But when I walked into the spin room the other night, the only people that say hi to me are the police. I love the cops. They're all Nassau County cops, all guys that, you know, kind of like guys I grew up with. We were all troublemakers, and they all grew up and became cops, and they're good guys. And they work really hard, and they keep the county safe. Anyway, so long story short here, Hillary vehemently attacks Trump's for comments that he made about this woman. You said, and anyway, so Anderson asks about this. Well, you said to the woman, you said the Trump campaign is going to try to discredit you. There are reports that people have been referencing you and that you might have been involved in a little incident when you were in Venezuela when you were actually accused of driving a getaway car from a murder scene. Now, the judge in the case also said you threatened to kill him. Whoops. After he indicted your boyfriend for the attempted murder. I just want to give you a chance to address it. Anyway, so Miss Universe, Venezuela's Alicia Machado, there kisses Donald Trump on January 28th during her daily fitness workout. Oops. So she likes Donald Trump. She gives him a kiss. I guess that relationship wasn't so sour after all. And anyway, so her answer to, well, were you the getaway driver in a murder scene? Did you threaten to kill a judge? Her answer is, well, you know, I have my past. Everybody has a past. I'm not a saint, girl.
You said that, you know, the Trump campaign will try to discredit you. There are reports that Trump surrogates tonight have been referencing and pointing to on CNN and elsewhere about an incident in 1998 in Venezuela where you were accused of driving a getaway car from a murder scene. You were never charged with this. The judge in the case also said you'd threatened to kill him after he indicted your boyfriend for the attempted murder. I just want to give you a chance to address these reports that the Trump surrogates are talking about.
He can say whatever he wants to say. I don't care. You know, I have my past. Of course, everybody has. Everybody has a past. And I'm not a saint girl, but that is not a point now. That moment in Venezuela was wrong, was another speculation about my life because I'm a really famous person in my country because I'm an actress there and in Mexico too. And he can use whatever he wants to use. The point is that happened 20 years ago.
You know, the attempted murder, driving away from a murder, was 20 years ago. Threatening to kill a judge was a long time ago, for crying out loud. You know, geez, I'm sorry. I tried, you know, do we have to talk about that I threatened to kill the judge? Oh, well, does that not go to the heart of it? Now, if everyone's so interested in talking about people in their past, then I suspect that the media is now going to go interview Juanita Broderick and Kathleen Willey and Paula Jones and Jennifer Flowers and Dolly Kyle, and maybe Monica will do an interview before this is all said and done. It just is so typical of a media bias. Now, more and more, as we get the information about the debate and everything that happened in the debate, you know, it's, you look at these statistics that I've been giving out the last couple of days, and Lester Holt, as Joe Concha, I thought he wrote a really good piece on this, that, you know, Lester Holt, he said, had a sterling reputation for being a nonpartisan newsman. He said he enters Tuesday's debate with a 40% of the country now questioning that distinction, and Holt was largely invisible, it said, but when Holt was invisible, he was targeting Trump and avoiding Clinton. It's not to say the Republican nominee shouldn't have been challenged or fact-checked, but as we've seen throughout this general election campaign, only one candidate is getting fact-checked, and the other one largely gets a pass. However, for the moderator to ignore any questions about the Clinton Foundation, which has been so much in the news for all the wrong reasons, and any direct inquiry about destroying evidence and deleting tens of thousands of emails, calls into question what Lester Holt's aim was. And these aren't periphery topics, the kind you could take or leave on such a stage. If they were ignored, it was done so purposefully. And he goes on to conclude that basically Lester Holt destroyed his reputation, which I agree with. But I'm not surprised. Is anybody here surprised that the media is this abusively biased? How many times do I have to go back and say what has happened to this country and the media? Media is dead. The news media in this country is non-existent. All these people that attack Sean Hannity, the only difference between me and them is I'm honest. I tell you what I think. I tell you what I stand on. There's no pretense here. And I'm not creating an image of pretense. Like, I love all these media shows out there, you know, making, Hannity, he's a Trump supporter. I'm like, yeah, I am. So, I mean, is that a surprise? That was a book. You know, things are so different. I'm going to give the media a story just in case they're listening, and I have no doubt they will. It used to be for all those people wigging out about Sean Hannity's role in this campaign. Do you know back in 2004, when George Bush was up for re-election, the weekend before the election? Yeah, I was on an airplane. Yeah, we went to Pennsylvania cities. And we went to Florida cities. And we went to Ohio cities. And let's see, who was on that plane? Ollie North and Bill Bennett and J.C. Watts and Zell Miller and Neil Bortz, who cursed in a church, which I couldn't believe, in Dayton, Ohio. To this day, I'm still like saying, God, forgive us for bringing him. And he did it in front of the pastor of the church from the pulpit. Couldn't believe it. And it was like a get out the vote effort. And we can't do that, I guess, anymore. Because the media, you know, can you imagine the story if I got on an airplane and campaigned for somebody? It'd be hilarious. Anyway, what's worse, being called Miss Piggy or a narcissistic Looney Tune? Maybe we should put this up as a poll question on Hannity.com today, because for some reason, the woman who says, oops, I wasn't perfect, I wasn't a saint, and yeah, I did threaten to kill the judge, but let's not talk about it, and I might have been involved as the getaway driver in a murder case, let's not talk about that, but, you know, we have ISIS terrorists running around shooting up malls all over the country, the national murder rate is now up 10%, the economy's in the crapper. The Mid East is in flames. North Korea testing nuclear missiles that can reach American shores. The Iranians have $150 billion of our dollars to build their first nuke. What do reporters in this country care about? A disgruntled beauty contestant from 20 years ago that Donald Trump may or may not have insulted. Well, if that pushes your buttons, then I guess you're going to cover this, because what if Donald Trump called her a narcissistic Looney Tune? Because those are words that actually came out of Hillary Clinton's mouth while she was trying to destroy a 22-year-old female intern who her husband was using as a sex toy. Now, anyway, an archive of correspondence and diary entries. This is CBS News, December 2013. Memos, notes from conversations kept by one of Hillary Clinton's closest friends, or for a look at Hillary Clinton's mindset through some of the most difficult parts of her husband's presidency, including the Monica Lewinsky scandal. And according to the friend, Diane Blair, a political science professor, whose papers were donated to the University of Arkansas Special Collections Library. Hillary Clinton credited Bill Clinton with trying to break away from Lewinsky, whom she called a, quote, narcissistic Looney Tune. Wonder if Donald Trump said this. Now, CBS doesn't say whether Hillary trashed Monica Lewinsky before or after she deployed her henchmen, people like Sid Vicious Blumenthal, to attack Lewinsky. Remember the whole nuts and sluts strategy against her? Remember Christopher Hitchens, the late Christopher Hitchens? He recalled in 1999, Blumenthal told me that, quote, what people need to understand was that Monica Lewinsky was a stalker, an unstable minx who had been threatening Clinton and telling him that if he didn't have sex with her, she would say they had sex anyway. It was no informal chat, he said. I wasn't asked to keep the interpretation to ourselves. The presence was that Sidney was that of Sidney, but the spin was his master's voice. Well, who is Sid Vicious Blumenthal's master? Hillary Clinton. Miss Universe, I guess maybe in that sense, you know, who would you rather be attacked by? Anyway, we got all this today. We got the latest poll numbers. Trump up 4 in one, down 4 in another. No impact seemingly yet from the first presidential debate. We'll get a lot of your calls in here. 800-941-SHAWN is a toll-free telephone number. Later on in the program, we do have our pollsters. We've got Newt Gingrich to weigh in on this whole Miss Universe case and much more. And we got just a ton of stuff to get to in the course of today's program. Higher taxes or no higher taxes? Supreme Court justices that will cite foreign constitutions to justify their legislating from the bench, or originalists like Scalia and Thomas? You want health care? Want Obamacare removed? You didn't keep your doctor or plan or save $2,500 a year. Premiums are up for the average family, $4,100 a year. Hillary wants coal mining companies out of work, out of business, and coal miners out of work. Trump wants energy independence. You want to vet refugees, or do you, and listen to Clapper and Comey and Steinbeck and Brennan and McCall and General John Allen that say ISIS will infiltrate that population? Or do you want no vetting like Hillary's promising and a 550% increase in refugees? You want the bridge to Mexico that Hillary says we ought to build instead of a wall? Or do you want the wall and protect our borders, and you do it for national security reasons, and you do it because you don't need competition when we have 95 million Americans out of the labor force and the lowest labor participation rate since the 70s? You want a president that can recognize our enemy, radical Islamists, or not? That's what the election fundamentally is all about. Eric Trump is with us. He's in Charlotte, North Carolina. One of the people there have been suffering. How are you?
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm good.
To be on.
Hey, great to have you back. I saw you the night of the debate, and you were very upfront and very honest. I said, who was more nervous, you or your dad? And you said, he was calm as a cucumber. You were a wreck.
I think it normally has that effect on family members. Honestly, you just want to be up there fighting with him and alongside with him. I believe in the message more than anybody. I mean, he's a man that knows how to win. He's a man that's been an immense success in life. There's no better, you know, negotiator in the world. He's just an amazing, amazing person. He was cool as a cucumber, exactly as you said. But honestly, I think it's sometimes more nerve-wracking for the family than it is for the person who's actually up there defending themselves.
What did you think of the end of the debate when Hillary just bombards your dad with all of this rhetoric of hers? Now, it turns out that a lot of what she said has become controversial because apparently the woman that she alleges that your dad called Miss Piggy once, a former Miss Venezuela, well, she's got problems because apparently she was accused of driving a getaway car to a murder scene. And on top of that, she threatened to kill a judge. And on top of that, she's in all these porn videos. And apparently the media colluded with the Clinton campaign and had all of this set up and prepared to hurt your father. And your father said, you know what? I see Chelsea Clinton in the audience. I'm not going there, but I can, but I'm not going to.
Seems like another day in the life of the Clintons, right? I mean, this is who they are as people. This is who they've been for, you know, decades and decades. I mean, Hillary's been a politician longer than I've been alive. It's kind of hard to believe. It's amazing when you hear her talk about sexism and these various claims, which are ridiculous, aside from obviously Bill, her husband being maybe the worst that's ever lived. If you look at the Clinton Foundation, the average female executive at the Clinton Foundation makes $80,000 a year less than the average male executive. It is the most hypocritical statement in the world. And I think that very much was to my father's point, Sean, which is, you know, you better start practicing what you preach. You know, politicians are all talk, no action. And you can't live one way in your private life and then speak differently in your public life. She's been a politician for 30 years. Where has she been on so many of the issues? And it's very, very sad. But you know what? Americans are very, very smart, and they look through this garbage, and they see the truth. And I think we're going to win in a landslide come November 8th.
How is it possible to have a 90-minute, commercial-free, uninterrupted debate and not mention the following? Obamacare, Benghazi, the real state of the economy. When I heard the first question, I'm like, what alter universe is Lester Holt living in? You know, Clinton's pay-to-play, the Clinton Foundation, the email server. How do you not mention immigration or vetting refugees? Or, if we're going to talk about women, you know that Diane Blair, this is a CBS News report, December of 2013, who was a political science professor. Her papers were donated to the University of Arkansas Special Collections Library. Well, Hillary Clinton credited Bill Clinton with trying to break away from Lewinsky, and Hillary called Lewinsky a narcissistic looney tune. I wonder if the media is going to follow up on that story, or it's just going to be left for me as usual. How do you go through a 90-minute debate and not bring up any of this stuff?
I was sitting there front row. I couldn't believe it, right? It was question after question after question on very insignificant things, right? I mean, very, very insignificant things relative to so many of the topics that you just talked about. The emails, I mean, she lied to the Department of Justice. She lied to the FBI. She lied to Congress. I mean, the Congress had told her, do not delete your emails. Please preserve your emails, right? I mean, they subpoenaed them. And despite the subpoena, she deleted all of them. It's like she's above the law. One of my good friends, Mark Geist, he's one of the survivors from Benghazi. You know him very well. He had his, you know, arm horribly, horribly blown off by the by one of the mortars that came in. He's an amazing, amazing American. He's an amazing guy. He was sitting in the audience. I mean, how would I feel if I was him and Benghazi didn't even come up? I mean, it's terrible stuff. I mean, the media bias out there is unlike anything, Sean, I've ever seen before. And, you know, I mean, I thank God every day that we have guys like you that fight it from the other side. But it's terrible. I mean, it's absolutely
It's never been
terrible.
This bad. You know, in 2007 and 8, and I think we only knew each other really on the periphery. I certainly didn't know you as well as I know you now. But, you know, I was doing the vetting of Obama, and I would talk about Frank Marshall Davis, the great influence in his life, and Alinsky, and how he was Alinskyite disciple, and Acorn, a community organizer, how he bought into black liberation theology and what that was rooted in, and 20 years in the pews of the Church of G.D. America and Reverend Wright and his association with unrepentant domestic terrorists, Ayers and Dorn, and his real radicalism. Unfortunately, I was proven right. If Hillary's elected, it's the same thing on steroids. Why would the country go down this road again when I keep reading statistics, the worst recovery since the 40s, lowest labor participation rate since the 70s, 12 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. Your dad brought up a doubling of our national debt, more debt than every other president before him combined. Why would we ever go down that road again?
Well, it's also more debt, and it's also higher taxes, right? It's one thing if you tax a little bit higher, but you're paying down national debt. It's totally unacceptable when you have debt rising and you have taxes rising and you have every other expense in your life rising, right? I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. I think we're going to win this. I think we're going to win this decisively because I think people are sick of the nonsense. And the problem is it's not just our lives. I mean, it's future generations of Americans. And I don't mean to sound, you know, trivial in saying it that way. But it's crazy. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. Look at what the next generation, our kids, are inheriting. They're inheriting $20 trillion. They're inheriting an educational system that's a total disaster. They're inheriting a military that's no longer even close to what it used to be. I mean, you have sons of fathers that are flying the same jets in the Navy. I mean, think about how scary that is. You have B-52s that were built in 1950. You know, that are still carrying our nuclear arsenal around the world. I mean, think about that. And you look at the threats out there. I mean, just everywhere you look, whether it be Iran, whether it be North Korea, whether it be China, whether it be Russia, you know, whether it be ISIS. I mean, look at the threats that we have in the world now. It's almost a more dangerous world than it's ever been before. I mean, we have to get our act together. And you can't be strong as a country if you don't have an incredibly strong economy. You can't have an incredibly strong economy if you're being suffocated by $20 trillion worth of debt and going up incredibly quickly. I mean, it's just a scary proposition. If we ran our personal lives the way that the United States government runs itself, we'd be bankrupt in about 2 seconds. I mean, it's really, really very, very sad, and no one holds these people accountable. It's really, what have you done for me lately? And it's the wrong way to look at it, because it's putting our country in peril.
What have you learned being out on the road, like you and your brother, Don Jr.? And I've known you guys now for a long time. And, you know, what have you learned about this country being out on the road as you have been?
I think, honestly, how bad the system is, how broken the system is. You know, there's so many politicians, Sean, out there that are just truly horrible people. And I mean that. I can say that as a civilian. I truly, truly mean that. I think you have some that, you know, that really have, the right intent and heart. But you really have some very, very bad people out there. I mean, they get to Washington, they get very much corrupted. They're corrupted by special interests. They're corrupted by, the beautiful corner offices on Pennsylvania Avenue. They get there with a lot of sincere intent, and I truly believe that. And then all of a sudden they get very, very comfortable, and they don't want to go anywhere, and they like the quality of life, and they like being wined and dined every night by, some different contractor or some different, person. And all of a sudden they don't want to change their lifestyle, and they stop making the hard decisions that politicians need to make. And when you look at foundation,
you're really
right,
describing my biggest complaint with the Republican Party. I mean, I'm more angry at them because, you know, they promised that they would build the wall. They promised they'd repeal Obamacare, but they wouldn't use their enumerated power of the purse. They promised to stop illegal, unconstitutional executive amnesty. And, you know, I'm more disappointed in them. I expected it out of Obama.
I hate to say it, Sean, but I think both parties have a lot of fault. I mean, I think you look at the educational system that I mentioned before. I mean, something that is no question everybody agrees on, probably the most important priority of a nation, is educating the nation's youth, right? There's no one would ever argue that. No one would ever argue that. Why hasn't anything been done about it? Why hasn't anything been done about it? I mean, it's really mind-boggling. I really blame both parties for allowing it to go this far. And that's why I think we're going to win. I mean, I think it's a lot of people are very refreshed that you don't have a politician in there, that you have somebody who's never been a politician. My father's employed tens of thousands, of people. He's always signed the front of the check, not the back of the check. I mean, it's just very, very different. And these games end the second he wins. I mean, he will restore fiscal responsibility to this country. He will restore respect to this country. He will restore security to this country. He will let law enforcement do what they need to do. He will let our military leaders do what they need to do to take care of problems. You know, that's how you have to run a country. And, you know, the mess and the games and the nonsense is just going to stop. It's going to stop so quickly, people's heads are going to spin. And
that's the one thing that I have gotten to know about your dad. It's funny. And, you know, like they tried to do a hit piece on Hannity tries to advise Donald Trump. I'm like, Donald Trump, he listens to everybody, but he's his own guy. He's going to do his own thing. He's going to do it his way. And you know what? And this is why I think this is the biggest choice election since Reagan and Carter, because, you know, I like the idea that he's going to allow multinational corporations to bring back trillions, because that's going to put people in Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Ohio and Pennsylvania back to work. And, you know, trillions of dollars. Just say, hey, invest here. I love lowering the corporate tax rate. Invest here. You know, be energy independent. Invest here.
Why wouldn't we do that, Sean? I mean, why wouldn't we do that? Everybody knows one thing, that at 35% taxes, right, not a single one of the companies, whether it be Apple, whether it be, any of these big...
They're not going to bring their money back.
They're not bringing their money back. They haven't over the last 15 years. It's always been the same. Like, the one thing we all know is that tax rate, they're not bringing their money back. We all want that money back in the United States. I mean, think of what $5, $6 trillion cash infusion to the United States would do for our country on so many levels. So if they're not doing that at 35%, why not do it at 10%? Not only is that not a lot of money, 10% of $5, $6 trillion is obviously a lot of money. Not only is that a lot of money for the government, but think about that money going to work in our own country. Why isn't the president focused on this? Why isn't anybody focused on this? Everybody would agree with this. I mean, the problem is instead they're playing golf in Martha's Vineyard and they're, doing high-dollar fundraisers. I mean,
it really is so corrupt. The whole system is so disgustingly corrupt. And having been, following this my whole life, I thought I knew how bad it was. I just didn't know it was this bad, because it's worse than I'll give you one example. You know, we have more natural gas. We have more oil reserves. We have more clean coal than the entire Middle East combined. And because of, I guess, you know, I mean, I don't know if you noticed this today, but Obama was humiliated for the first time, the House and the Senate overriding the bill where 9/11 victims can sue the Saudis. Well, that's another issue that didn't come up. Hillary Clinton taking money from people that are that treat women like third class citizens and persecute gays and lesbians and Christians and Jews. And she takes their money and they buy silence from her. And I'm thinking, you know, we could be energy independent and countries that hate our guts control the lifeblood of our economy. And we could create millions of high paying jobs and careers for people. And we don't do something as simple as that. That's so frustrating to me.
I spent the week in Western Pennsylvania, all over Pittsburgh, and last week I spent you know, a bunch of days there. And literally everywhere I went, there were, you know, I ran into, you know, to co-workers, steel workers, you know, guys who were drilling, you know, pipelines, and you know, just, you know, drilling for natural gas, etc. And I can't tell you, Sean, how many people came up. You know, we've been Democrats for the last, you know, 100 years. My whole family, everybody in my family, our whole town, we're all Democrats, and we're all voting for your father. I mean, the amount of Trump signs up across the state are unbelievable, and people are sick of it.
By the way,
Think about the fact that we're taking oil, loading it into a boat, sailing it across a major, major, major ocean from a country that hates our guts. We're paying them exorbitant amounts of money. That money is being used against us later on because there's no question that a lot of it's going back to the war on terror. We're making these countries rich. We're rebuilding their countries over and over and over, all while we're amassing massive amounts of debt, and while we keep our own people, hardworking Americans, unemployed in our own country.
It's,
I mean,
nuts.
It's infuriating.
It's the definition of insanity. All right, I have a last question because I got to go. Who got in more trouble, you, your brother, your sisters?
Oh, Don did.
Don by a lot, right?
Yeah, Don did. But
is that why me and Don get along so well? Because he was the troublemaker.
Don's a couple years older, so he paved the way. So after Don, it's like I could do no wrong.
Why do I think Ivanka got away with murder? Because she just, you know,
she did.
She was daddy's girl, right?
Ivanka got away with murder.
I know.
Well, no, but Don was the oldest, so he, you know, aside from the fact that he was the oldest, you know,
I heard about the party on the roof. I did hear about that story.
Yeah, Don had a couple good ones, but he's a great guy, and Ivanka is an amazing person as well. And
it's a nice family.
Good one.
We got 41 days, Eric. Buckle up. It's not going to be easy. Hang in there.
Hey, we will work 24 hours a day for you, Sean, and we're going to do this, and we're going to win. Just everybody get out to the polls. We will win this thing for you, I promise, and we will.
Early voting is going on now. I urge a lot of people to pay attention to that. All right. Thank you, Eric Trump. Appreciate it. When we come back, Newt Gingrich, 800-941-SEAN is our number.
Did you call her a narcissistic Looney Tune?
I am not going to comment on what I did or did not say back in the late 90s.
This woman, this little soft-spoken, pardon me for the phrase, dowdy woman, that was seen very unassertive, took a hold of my hand and squeezed it and said, "Do you understand everything that you do?" I could have passed out at that moment. She was just holding on to my hand. She didn't, because I had started to turn away from her. And she held on to my hand, and she said, "Do you understand everything that you do?" I mean, cold chills went up my spine. That's the first time I became afraid of that woman.
People have been harassing my husband for, gosh, I don't know, ever since I've known him.
I believe she knew it. Just like I said, it was a political relationship that they had. It wasn't a normal, average marriage. She didn't even stand up for the women that knew what her husband did, and she knew what her husband did to those women. There's no way that she did not know that.
Here they come again. We're going to have to just ride through this, as we have so many of these other false accusations.
There's been a lot of people that's come up dead in Arkansas, and I've had a lot of people ask me, "Aren't you scared for your life?" And actually, I have been.
"We will destroy you," is what they said to me.
Who said?
My brother said it on behalf of Billy when he was campaigning for him in 1992.
I have to believe that it is in large measure motivated by people who just flat out disagree with the kind of politics and policies that my husband believes are best for America.
Bill, you're in any danger? And at this point, people
threaten
you?
Not anymore. I used to.
You used to think that you were in physical danger?
Really, really. Yeah, I was. I was very scared. I was horribly, horribly threatened. And people don't know that story.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that there are professional forces on the right at work for their own purposes and profit there are just so many curious relationships among a lot of people and various institutes and entities. And I think that that deserves thorough investigation.
Why did you originally deny it, considering this was a legal matter?
Did you see what happened to Jennifer Flowers? Did you see what was happening to Paula Jones? My allegation. Yes. No, not afraid. I just knew what would happen.
All right. That was all. Those were all of the Clinton accusers. And of course, the women speaking out very strongly about the things that had happened to them and the words from Hillary Clinton herself. Now that she wants to make the issue of women an issue in this campaign. Well, I think the next question on top of all of these women and the things she said over the years is, why is she taking money from countries that abuse women? Like Saudi Arabia. And clearly they bought her silence because she's not critical of the country's practices and abuse of women and gays and lesbians and Christians and Jews. I mean, nearly $25 million to the Clinton Foundation just from Saudi Arabia alone. An additional $10 million for the Clinton Library from Saudi Arabia. Joining us now, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. How are you, sir? Glad you could be with us.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, and the degree to which the elite media and the Clinton campaign colluded to create a totally artificial story about Miss Universe, which is a 20-year-old story, by the way, and the way in which they set the whole thing up. I mean, I'm actually surprised people like the Washington Post this morning have been laying out how thorough the conspiracy was to create this artificial scandal so that they could go after Trump, and how many different news media sources were involved in setting up this ambush, and what a bad person they chose to do as their central figure. Because the more you study...
Why don't you explain the whole background here? Because why don't you just tell the story? Because I know you've gone on Facebook earlier today to get this out. Why don't you explain it?
Well, here's the deal. There was no question that 20 years ago that Donald Trump, who was the owner of Miss Universe and had a big interest in the value of Miss Universe, had a woman who had won Miss Universe, Alicia Mercado, and she gained a lot of weight, and he got in a big fight about getting her to lose weight because it affected the whole brand value. There's no question about that. There's also no question that Hillary Clinton, at the last minute in the debate, set up this whole question about Trump and deliberately drew her in. Now, up to that point, you know, you then have all the sorts of different normal things. CNN dives in, everybody starts getting excited, Morning Joe dives in. But here's what the Washington Post reports, and I'm quoting from the Post, this is not Newt Gingrich. Operatives in Brooklyn had been working with Mercado since this summer. They had a video featuring her story ready to go. Cosmopolitan had a photo spread of her draped in an American flag to go with a profile in the can. Mercado had also conducted an interview with The Guardian that was apparently embargoed for post-debate release, according to Vox. Clinton's Super PAC Priorities USA turned a digital ad to highlight the insults by early afternoon. The Clinton press shop set up a conference call for Mercado to respond to what Trump said on Fox and Friends. So this whole thing is basically... an ambush which was going to happen because they had already set it up and they were already prepared no matter what to go after Trump on this particular person. Now, what makes it really weird is when you start diving into who she is and what she did, etc., it gets stranger and stranger. I mean, you can't, some of this stuff is like it's a novel, frankly, and you can't make this stuff up. And yet this is all a methodical, systematic effort by the elite media to define this on terms that are designed to isolate Trump. But the fact is, let me just give you a couple examples again. I'm just quoting. This is not my opinion. But the fact is that the Ben Domenech, whose daily publication is one of the best in the country for conservative ideas. He came back, and this is what he says. He says, what the media is not telling you about Miss Universe. He said, she has a full court press. Now, here's where it gets fascinating. he quotes Peyton saying, quote, the media quickly and dutifully peddled out Mercado's sob story as another example of Trump's sexist behavior. The very next day, Cosmopolitan rolled out an in-depth interview with the Venezuelan beauty queen detailing the horrors of Trump's name-calling, okay? But then they discover, quote, and this is a quote now, this is not me. In 2010, the Mexican Attorney General's office said she was romantically involved and had a daughter with the notorious drug lord Jose Gerardo Alvarez Vasquez, known as El Indio. The allegation came from a witness who testified the two were romantically linked, according to CNN. This witness said El Indio and several other known drug traffickers attended Mercado's daughter's baptism in 2008. The witness, who went into protection soon after giving his testimony, was shot and killed at a cafe in Mexico City in 2009. A Venezuelan judge, quote, a Venezuelan judge said Mercado threatened to ruin my career as a judge and kill me after he indicted her then-boyfriend for murder. In 1998, her boyfriend allegedly shot and killed the judge's brother-in-law outside of the church where his sister's funeral was being held. According to the Associated Press, some said Mercado drove the getaway car, but she wasn't charged because there wasn't sufficient evidence. And there's a very interesting CNN clip, which I think you may have, in which she sort of says, hey, I'm not a saint. You know, you're asking about, gee, did you drive the getaway car for murder? Well, you know, I'm not a saint. I don't get into details here.
He can say whatever he wants. I don't care. You know, I have my past. Everybody has a past. I'm not a saint. And In other words, she's asked to deny the allegations here.
That she drove a getaway car for murder.
That's right.
And she doesn't. My only point is the conspiracy may have been so obvious that if even the Washington Post is reporting it, and the person they chose to glorify may be so flawed, that this could, as it sinks into the country, this could teach us more about the corruption of the elite media and the corruption of the Clinton campaign and their absolute lack of interest in facts, and could actually backfire on them big time.
Pretty fascinating, I got to tell you, and I think it already is.
Isn't it wild? I'm going to deal with it as a perfect test case for a political science course or a course in communications. I mean, this is one of those things that people should study for a long time. Why did the Clinton campaign pick her? It's a 20-year-old story. It's 2 years before Monica Lewinsky blows up. So why did they pick her? Why did they not understand?
Well, then we can go back. I have a CBS News report and an archive of correspondence, diary, entry memos, etc., notes from conversations kept by one of Hillary Clinton's closest friends, offered a pretty good look at Hillary Clinton's mindset through most of her difficult parts of her husband's presidency, including Monica Lewinsky. Now, according to her friend, Diane Blair, political science professor, whose papers were donated to the University of Arkansas Special Collections Library, Hillary Clinton credited Bill Clinton with trying to break away from Lewinsky, whom she called a narcissistic Looney Tune. Okay. Is that as fair game as what they're saying, Ms. Machado, 20 years earlier?
Well, narcissistic Looney Tune, I'm not sure whether, I mean, if you rate it, Miss Piggy versus narcissistic Looney Tune. I mean, you know, it'd be an interesting test case to go out on the street and, you know, check out with 20 people.
Christopher Hitchens recalled that Blumenthal told me what people need to understand about Monica Lewinsky. She was a stalker. She was an unstable minx who had been threatening Clinton and telling him that if he didn't have sex with her, she would say he had it anyway. Really? An intern had that much power over a president?
Think about that imagery for a second. Say, okay, this guy's going to stand up to the Russians, but...
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's all nonsense. I mean, what you had was a deliberate, methodical smear campaign, which is part of the Clinton model. And what I'm fascinated with, and I didn't get into all this until this morning, and I give Ben Domenech and his publication, The Transom, a lot of credit. Because as I looked at that, and then as I said to you, my shock that the Washington Post actually printed the outline of the conspiracy and said, look, this whole thing, it was done deliberately. She did it knowing that they'd set the whole thing up. They did it as an ambush. None of this, in fact, is accidental. And it is a methodical smear campaign against Trump using somebody who is extraordinarily flawed.
It is an act of desperation, too. But I think the broader story is... what you're saying, and that is that the media is complicit. The media is the number one donor to the Clinton campaign. You know, look at Lester Holt the other day. I mean, Lester Holt, we gave all the stats out yesterday. I mean, he interrupts Trump a whole bunch of times, asks Trump all the contentious issues, but he avoids immigration. He avoids the Supreme Court. He avoids the emails. He avoids the Clinton Foundation. He avoids the money given to the foundation. He avoids those the pay-to-play access that Hillary gave. All of that's off the table, but birtherism is on the table.
Well, look. I believe, and I said this in my newsletter, as you know, and I said it actually with you when we talked about midnight after the debate Monday night. This was the Holt-Clinton versus Trump debate, and you have to see it as tag team. Holt was on Clinton's side. This moderator stuff's nonsense. And I predict you, by the way, that Anderson Cooper will be 10 times worse than Holt because he's so deeply prejudiced against Trump. And so I think what you're going to see is and Trump's just got to prepare for this. Every single debate's going to be double-teamed. He's going to have the moderator, who's a liberal, and he's going to have Hillary, and they're both going to be on the same team. And there are rumors that Hillary actually was given the questions in advance. I don't know if it's true, but it would not shock me because they all operate in the same circle. They go to the same cocktail parties. They all know each other. Her operatives and the news media producers on the left are all close friends. And this whole thing is a setup. But this particular case is such a vivid setup. And in the end, it's not going to work. I mean, the average American, in the end, is not going to say, I'm so offended by something which happened 20 years ago in a beauty pageant, that, boy, that really turns me off. And as they learn that the whole thing was a fraud, it was all a setup by the Clinton campaign and, as you point out, by the elite news media, I think they become even less likely to agree to this. And I think in the end will be it's a diversion, and we'll go on to the big issues where Trump is winning on every single one of them.
I think Trump did well, and I think the number one thing he needed to accomplish, he accomplished, which is that he can withstand all the nonstop personal attacks by Hillary. If I had to improve two things, one is if she asked about taxes, I wouldn't answer any of her questions again. I wouldn't be defensive. And second, there's a lot of things. If Lester Holt or Anderson Cooper aren't going to bring him up, I think he should start bringing him up.
Well, I think somebody should set up a bias check in real time, so you can go to one site and look at the biases of the moderator for each debate as it happens. Because I think we need to have a much better model of looking at that.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Mr. Speaker, now we do have the benefit. We're going to blow this open tonight. We'll do the media's job, expose them so they can write more nasty columns about how horrible a person I am tonight at 10, and you're going to be joining us. Look forward to having you back.
I look forward. It'll be great, and this thing is absolutely going to just roll out of control, and the Clintons are going to be really sad that they ever brought it up.
Michelle Obama, we need an adult in the White House. I actually agree with her. It's time for an adult.
Which is why we need Trump.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Alrighty. Talk to you soon.
Joining us now is Ajit Pai is with us, Commissioner at the United States Federal Communications Commission. Now, he's here to describe what's happening with the United States and control of the Internet. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this because we are just 41 days till Election Day. But as my friend, former Senator Jim DeMint in Heritage wrote, although there are many problems with the budget deal, only one is irreversible and permanent, allowing the Obama administration to cede oversight of the Internet to foreign bodies. It's troubling that the Senate has failed to include language prohibiting this transfer of power, and the Obama administration announced the goal of ending the U.S. contractual oversight of what's called ICANN in 2014 and asked ICANN to submit a plan to fill the gap of U.S. withdrawal and implement stronger accountability measures to make sure ICANN does not abuse its authority. Great. Anyway, Ajit, what does this mean? I know Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are against it, and everything I've read, this is us ceding every bit of control we had away.
Hey, Sean, great to be with you. Yes, this proposal is essentially to give up the U.S. oversight role that it's had for the last 20 years, basically for the entire commercial lifespan of the Internet, to a company called ICANN, which is an international organization which includes a number of foreign countries. And it's an unprecedented move, and one that, as Mr. DeMint pointed out, is irreversible. Once we give up this oversight role, we can't get it back. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people have raised concerns concern. What does this mean for the future of the internet, especially if foreign governments are involved?
Well, so in other words, why would we even consider giving up this power? I mean, let me give you an example. The U.S. is part of the United Nations. The United Nations is lecturing the United States that we ought to pay reparations. I mean, we pay the majority of money for the United Nations. It screws up traffic in New York, which directly impacts my life, which is kind of selfish, but I'm not sure exactly why we need the UN in New York or even in the United States, as it has proven itself again and again to be historically anti-Semitic and anti-American.
And one of the biggest points I made, and I wrote this 2 years ago when the transition was first proposed by the administration, is look, the internet is one of the greatest free market, liberty-loving innovations in history. So the burden is on people who want to change how it operates to prove that that change is worthwhile. And over the last couple of years, we haven't really seen a case made other than, well, you know, we have to do it because the rest of the world wants us to give up this oversight role. But to me, you know, this is a classic case of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. As I said, the internet has served us well, has served people around the world very well. And if you cherish free expression and free speech rights generally, you should be worried, I think, when there's this oversight role is going to be ceded to potentially foreign governments who might not share our values.
Well, it's pretty unbelievable to me that the United States, why isn't the Senate dealing with this?
Well, they have considered in the so-called CR legislation, including a rider on this. For some reason, it was taken out. And that's one of the things that, you know, it's up to Congress to include, of course. But it seems to me there's no rush to get this done. I mean, to me, if we're talking about something as important as the internet, it's far more important to get this right than to get it done right now. And so I've called on Congress to at least give people additional time to think about these serious issues instead of you're just rushing.
Well, what is the time frame on this now?
On October 1st, the U.S. government will end its oversight role, so in a few days, basically. And that's why Congress was very focused on trying to get, members of Congress are trying to get this into that continuing resolution bill.
Well, why is the Senate up to now failed to include the language prohibiting this transfer?
That's a good question. We've been trying to figure out as well, and it's a lot of inside baseball, and I'm on the outside at the moment. So, you know, I'm hopeful that this is a bipartisan cause that, you know, ultimately will find expression in the legislation.
All right. Appreciate you being with us. Thank you. 800-941-SHAWN. I guess the only thing I can say is, Congress, you better get in control of your congressman, because otherwise the internet will be run by people that hate the United States, kind of like the UN. All right, let's get to our busy telephones here. Nick is in Indiana. Nick, hi, how are you? And we're glad you called.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Hannity. I'd just like to comment on the debates and the race and the issue of stop and frisk. As a police officer in current day America, I think when you're looking at the aspect of stop and frisk, it's a very complex issue. And I think it's even more complex than Mr. Trump and Ms. Clinton are viewing it from. And it's my personal opinion that I think Mr. Trump is definitely favorable for law enforcement, and I don't want to see it turn into a race issue. And what I'd like to comment on is when you're talking about stop and frisk and people bring up race, good police officers profile actions. We don't profile race. Race is a byproduct of that. And that's what draws our attention. So it's been proven to work. I would just like to say maybe we need to look at possibly going back to that or going into something.
Here's the bottom line. What they did in New York, I watched up close and personal, and I saw the success. Now, you know, and I've interviewed Rudy Giuliani a lot about it, and he's the one that implemented it. And what they did was they looked at New York City and they said 2,200 to 2,500 murders a year is just out of control. And as the mayor of this city and as the police commissioner of this city, I have an obligation to protect the citizens of this city. And what they did is they dramatically shifted where police resources were from being maybe central, you know, basically, I guess, duplicated in terms of presence around the city. And they concentrated most of their resources in the neighborhood that had the highest crime statistics, the highest murder rates. And what they did is by concentrating their resources, which are limited for any big city, but in New York, they have a pretty big police department, 35,000 officers or so. And what they were able to do is dramatically drop the murder rate from what it was, 2,200, 2,500, somewhere around there, to about 300 to 400. Now, if you look at the demographic makeup, that means that a lot of lives, minority lives, were saved. And there are so many good people that feel that they can't even walk outside their door in certain bad neighborhoods in certain cities. And he protected the innocent people that deserve to live in peace. And he also saved lives in the process. Now, I am a licensed gun owner. And if I get pulled over by a police officer and they want to stop me and ask me a question because I look suspicious, let's say I'm in a neighborhood that is known for drug distribution and drug dealing. Okay, drive through, they stop me, they frisk me, and I have my gun on me, I have a gun permit. Now, a lot of times they're finding people with guns that don't have a license, that isn't legal. And they have backgrounds, they have felonies and records and warrants, et cetera, et cetera. It just worked. Do I worry about civil liberties in some ways? Yeah, but I think they balanced it actually pretty well. And I like the success. I like the fact that innocent people's lives are protected and saved. I think that's extraordinarily important if we care about human beings, and I do. I don't want to see people shot. I don't think we need 3,000 people shot since the beginning of this year in Chicago. Nearly 4,000 killed since Obama became president in his hometown of Chicago. I know it didn't make news. It doesn't make news like Trayvon Martin and like Ferguson and like Baltimore, but it should make news because this is an epidemic. Young lives being slaughtered. Innocent children, literally roadkill. They're the innocent victims in this, you know, unending cycle of violence. It's horrible, and it's preventable. Let's prevent it and save lives. Anyway, appreciate it. Let's go to our busy phones. Nancy in Dallas, Texas, on The Answer. What's up, Nancy? How are you? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you for letting me do what I do.
Oh. I'm calling about the recent ads by Hillary Clinton that show the little girls, the young girls, and saying that Donald Trump, you know, is this really the type of president we want for our daughters? Well, as a professional mother of twin daughters who will be 13 in December, I unequivocally say that, yes, I would like Trump to be the president over Hillary. She is. This ad is so hypocritical in the face of everything that she has done, everything she's not done, when it comes to all the victims of her husband, the money that she's, and you say this so eloquently, but, you know, all the money that she's taken through her foundation. I'm just incensed, to be honest with you, that these ads and she's strategically putting them on different channels. It's just so frustrating, Sean, because we who know the truth and we know that Trump.
Let me ask you a question. Is Bill Clinton and her demonizing of women that accuse Bill Clinton, is she a good role model for women?
Absolutely not.
Basically, Donald Trump really could have blasted her and he didn't. And it showed a lot of restraint, didn't it?
It sure did.
Showed more restraint than I think I could have. But anyway, Absolutely. Thank you, Nancy. And good luck to your twin daughters, too. You know, when I was having kids, I only wanted boys. Then I had my daughter. I'm like, oh, my gosh. It's amazing. It's just the raising a boy and a girl. It's so different and so awesome. They both bring so much to the table in so many different ways. It's fun. All right, let's go to our phones. Let us go to Adam in Denver. Adam, how are you?
Good, Sean. How are you?
Good, sir.
Good, sir. Thank you for everything you do and delivering the truth to us deplorables.
we're all deplorable.
I'm a lowly deplorable welder here at Rocky Mountains. And I just kind of wanted to weigh in a little bit on Monday night's debate. I've heard a lot of criticism from the Trump corner as far as how there were issues about Hillary that Trump could have brought up and didn't, you know, things like Benghazi, things. I mean, there's a bucket, I would say, of an endless chasm of things that she's that we can call her out on. And I think that, I honestly think Trump is going to play it a little smarter than that. I think he's kind of saving the best for last. I mean, that's, I really think that he's.
Listen, as I've been saying, all the stuff that I know, look, Donald Trump needed to prove that he can withstand her attacks. He did. He also showed very different vision for the future of the country. He was very articulate about taxes, very passionate about crime and law and order and race relations. He did a great job tearing apart our failed foreign policy. But I get it. I know people want, you know, people want him to hit back the way he hit. I understand. And it's all coming. She's not going to get away with three debates without Obamacare, Benghazi, pay to play, the Clinton Foundation, the email server, her treatment of women that her husband didn't treat well. OK, so I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think it's going to be a great finish. You know, I think it's going to be he's saving the best for last. So I can't wait.
All right. I appreciate the call. 800-941-SHAWN is a number.
Oh, we are going to win Florida so big. It'll be amazing. This is a movement like they have never seen before. Never. Last night was very exciting, and almost every single poll had us winning the debate against crooked Hillary Clinton, big league, big league. She is as crooked as they come. For 90 minutes, I watched her very carefully, and I was also holding back. I didn't want to do anything to embarrass her. But I watched her, and she was stuck in the past. For 90 minutes, on issue after issue, Hillary Clinton defended the terrible status quo, while I laid out our plan, all of us together, to bring jobs, security, and prosperity back to the American people.
Do you feel that Lester Holt asked Hillary Clinton an equal number of hostile questions?
Well, he didn't ask her about the emails at all. He didn't ask her about her scandals. He didn't ask her about the Benghazi deal that she destroyed. He didn't ask her about a lot of things that she should have been asked about. I mean, you know, there's no question about it.
Why do you think that is?
Her foundation. Why? I don't know. I mean, you know, I didn't think he did a bad job, but I didn't, you know, when you look at it, you watch the last four questions. He hit me on Bertha. He hit me on a housing deal from many years ago that I settled with
1973.
With no recourse. And no guilt. He asked me about that. That's a beauty to be asked. You know, 40-year-old lawsuit.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour. That was Donald Trump response. I mean, think about it. They didn't talk about Benghazi. They didn't talk about the Clinton Foundation. They didn't talk about pay to play. They didn't even talk about the emails at all. They didn't talk about immigration. They didn't talk about vetting refugees. They didn't talk about a lot of stuff. Pretty amazing. Anyway, latest poll numbers, we have a mixed bag. We have Trump up 4-1. We have him down 4-another. I'm not sure if there's any insight we can draw from any of this. Joining us now is John McLaughlin, pollster, founder of McLaughlin & Associates. And we expect Doug Schoen will be joining us shortly. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
What do you think? What was your overall impression of the debate, and do you think it has any impact on polls?
Well, I think the amazing thing was 84 million people got to watch it. And I thought Donald Trump in the beginning, in spite of the media spin, I always thought that the worst thing about this would be the media spin coming out of the box, because she's, you know, it's formidable. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, I heard the first question from Lester Holt where he was saying the economy's great, jobs are growing. And I was listening to this and I'm saying, that's not the America I know. And what was interesting about Trump was, right off the bat, at some point you could see his gut instinct was going up where he's like, we're losing jobs. We're not gaining jobs. And that's what he said. And I think most people related to that. So, you know, I think if you watch the debate, Trump did fine. And the expectation wasn't that he was going to be as polished or as professional as Hillary Clinton, but that he was going to appeal to voters. And the number of voters that I'm seeing, and you know, we're all in the field right now and getting partials back. I mean, it's not changing the votes very much. It's really close. And if anything, you go to the Real Clear Politics website where they, you know, it's still a 2-point spread. now. Granted, most of the polls were taken before the debate. But the other thing, too, is the Real Clear Politics electoral map, that there's a lag and there's not much new data post-debate. But Clinton, her, you need 270 electoral votes to win. She had dropped to 188, and she was over that total at one point. And Trump is and Pence are at 165, and the pure toss-ups are now at 185. So this is a totally up-for-grabs, dead-heat election, 6 weeks out, and Trump had a lot of momentum, and now Clinton and I think her allies in the press are trying to use it to slow him down.
But think about what wasn't brought up in this debate. Obamacare, Benghazi. Yeah. You know, you mentioned the first question, the real state of the economy. I went over this last night on the show. Pay to play, Clinton Foundation, email server, immigration, vetting refugees. What am I forgetting here? I mean, it's basically every major topic they didn't even touch. And, you know, then you look at the facts and you look at, you know, Lester Holt's obvious bias in this debate. You know, the fact that polls aren't showing any movement for Clinton, it just, it's proved my point, which is she has no room to grow.
Yeah, and the bias was, you know, Lester Holt asked Trump about his taxes. He asked, you know, he's asking Trump about things that put him on the defensive, and Hillary can then pile on and ram a punch. And at the end, the very last, when Hillary brought up some stuff with women and some of Trump's quotes, I mean, all I could think in my head was, Trump had one response. He said, you want to talk about women? Don't go there. He just said to Hillary Clinton, you really should not be going there. Don't go there at all. But the bias on Holt's part was unbelievable in the nature of the questions that he asked. And how do you go 90 minutes in a debate with Hillary Clinton when you don't ask her about Benghazi or the Clinton Foundation? I mean, to me, I think people get that. And I think you're going to see more of the pushback from the grassroots level on the Trump people and their passion, et cetera, is for real. And you're seeing all the, by the way, the internet polls that were up on websites that, whether they were Bloomberg or Time, which are clearly, you know, maybe a left to center audience, as well as Breitbart, et cetera, if you were somebody on the internet asked who you thought won the debate, Trump's winning all those internet polls because it didn't diminish any of the passion of his supporters.
Well, this was my point yesterday, is if you watch the punditry class, they wanted her to win, and so, you know, it's funny because I got an email. I started a long monologue on TV last night when I started the show, and it was similar to one I gave on radio yesterday. And a lady writes me and says, you know, I thought Donald Trump won the debate, did really well, until I started listening to all the pundits. And then all of a sudden you look at these polls. By the way, and we're not talking about, all right, you can look at the Hannity.com poll. All right, let's exclude that. Let's exclude the Drudge poll. But let's look at Time Magazine. Let's look at Slate. Let's look at CNBC. Let's look at CBS. Let's look at all of these mainstream media polls. Trump won and won big.
Right. But the great thing about Trump was he doesn't sit there and take it the way Romney did 4 years ago from these people. I mean, Lester Holt came out with, well, you supported the Iraq War. And he's like, no, I didn't. You're not telling the truth. And he cited you correctly as somebody that he argued with over whether, you know, it was right or wrong to go into Iraq. And you became a major point of this debate because, you know, and by the way, I'm sure Lester Holt has he called you or said, gee, Sean, is it right or wrong? Has he called you?
No.
So he didn't even fact check his question.
Listen, he was wrong on stop and frisk.
Right.
He was wrong on.
Oh, yeah.
He was wrong. He was wrong on the economy in his opening question.
Yeah.
He was wrong on Iraq also.
Yeah. Sean, can I get in here a second?
Hey, well, it's nice of you to show up. You were late. Don't blame me for you being late. You're like John's brother's always late.
Hanging around with Jim. By the way, Doug, you've been hanging around with Jim McLaughlin these days now.
No, I don't think so. But I tell you, I think, Sean, that what Donald has to do, there's a very simple exercise. When you walk out and you have a pad, if you noticed, Hillary Clinton wrote 5 or 6 notes down. Mm-hmm. If Donald had the words Benghazi,
right,
corruption, Clinton Foundation, change, corruption, and you just go through those words and you just check them off when you get to them, it's a very simple way to have a mnemonic that, candidly, gives you.
No, I would agree. Listen, I think he left issues on the table. I think he has no business responding to tax questions or some of the or the birther issue. He could have passed on both of those, as far as I'm concerned. And but with that said, you know, there was really one thing that I think America was looking for in terms of Donald Trump. Does Donald Trump seem presidential? Does he have the temperament to be president? And while maybe some on the left thought that Hillary going in and poking and prodding, and she dumped everything she had on him at this debate. She dumped the kitchen sink. And he didn't take the bait. He didn't get angry. He defended himself when he needed to. And then we've got real substantive differences that we had going into the debate on taxes, on the economy, on health care, on energy, on vetting refugees, on immigration.
If I can offer a slightly different view.
Yeah.
What he left missing was an alternative vision based on change, where he's going to lead the country, how he's going to offer change, and how he's going to offer hope and opportunity to people who, as you point out compellingly with the statistics, are really being left behind. If he can do that in the next two debates, he's potentially a winner. Without that, it's much more difficult.
I don't disagree with that. John McLaughlin.
And by the way, we've had this conversation last week and for weeks. Doug's exactly right. His strategy on change. And for those of us who are working for Donald Trump and have worked for, you know, as a friend when during the primary period when I was advising him, et cetera, this whole election is about change. And he embraced it because in his gut, he knows it's wrong what's going on with the economy. He knows the corporate taxes are too high and we need to lower them to create jobs for Americans. He knows, and he gave that answer at the debate, and the media has just ignored that. But he knows this is about change, and on security, he knows we make some...
But I think Doug's right. I think highlighting the word change.
And by the way, wasn't his strongest point in the debate when he says, you've been there for 30 years?
Yeah, I thought that was powerful. There's no doubt about it. And I think that's a point, too. And also when he says just words, you know, from a politician, I mean, it just dismisses out of hand, you know, oh, okay, you're going to defeat ISIS. Well, you've been saying that your whole career, and yet you created ISIS. I mean, he did take those moments, and I thought they worked out very well for him. But I do think that, you know, look, I don't think anybody got changed, and the polls out today show that nobody really changed their mind post-debate.
Right.
And I don't think Hillary has a lot of ground, that a lot of movement left available for her. I think the more that Trump seems presidential, I think there's a lot of swaying that he can do.
I want to say one more point on
Doug. In other words, there's more opportunity for him than her.
I want to tell you one more point where Doug's right. Doug is right because for those of us who have sat there and prepared people, whether it's sat in the room with Bibi Netanyahu or it's Arnold Schwarzenegger or Steve Forbes when he was running for president, and you sit there and you say, here's our strategy. We want to have these messages. You got to practice injecting that into the debate because you know the moderator is not going to do it for you. And you end up, Bibi won his election in a mini debate right before the election. Arnold won the recall.
By the way, wasn't Bibi sandbagged by a local TV station in that debate?
Yes.
So in other words, they were going to debate him. He was going to do an interview, and then his opponent was supposed to do an interview. They weren't supposed to be on together, and then they sandbagged Bibi and put the guy on with him, right?
They left him there, but we had him all tuned up to, these are the issues where we're different, and he just went right at the guy. He was just, because he, like Trump, he feels it. He has the principles. He knows. He's got the message. He's got the principles. You just need to practice a little. All of us have, Doug's done it. I've done it. Doug practiced with Bill Clinton, I'm sure.
Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton practice more than anyone I've ever seen. They're disciplined and assiduous. The other thing Donald needs help with is pivoting away from the attacks so he's not taking the bait. Rise above it. Go beyond it. You don't want to talk about your taxes. You don't want to talk about the Iraq War. You go back to change. I've answered that question. Let's go on. That has moral authority. He didn't do it. He keeps taking the bait. He's got to stop doing that.
Yeah. Debate practice is one of the most fun things you can do in a campaign. It should not be a pressure or a drag for the candidate. And it's one of those things. You're winning a debate. It's enjoyable if you like politics.
Yeah. I agree with that. But you know what? Everyone's got their own special style. Certainly Mr. Trump has his. You know, it's going to be interesting. I think the next two debates are going to be interesting. I think the VP debate is probably going to be boring. That's my guess. I don't know.
Look, there's one thing that's going to happen. Secretary Clinton in the next debate is going to go after Trump again. Does she believe that by doing that, she dramatically and demonstrably improved her position. He's got to practice fending off her attacks and pivoting to his issues. Again, if he doesn't do that, he will have a far less good outcome than he otherwise can.
I think that's well said. Good advice on both your parts. And when I run for office one day, I'll hire both
Sean,
of you, and you can...
I'm the only person who's ever been a guest on your show who's had a presidential line put in your lap with the ready ability to support, fund, and advocate for your candidacy.
This is a bipartisan. This is a true story, that you wanted me to run as an independent.
I did. We had a ballot line for you.
If Trump loses, I might consider in 4 years. How's that?
Sean, we will begin on November 9th.
I think he's going to win, though, so I don't think it's a problem. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said it.
He's not going to win. He's not going to lose. He's going to get better in each debate and win this thing.
Yeah, I agree with that, too.
Exactly right.
Sean, I'll have the political committee ready to meet the morning of the 9th.
All right, we'll put McLaughlin on as our pollster.
Absolutely. McLaughlin will be the pollster.
And Sean.
All right, guys.
If somebody would call up Sean Hannity.
All right, if you want to call up Sean Hannity, you can right now. 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free. All right, you guys think you're funny in there, don't you? Everybody thinks they're funny. Somebody sent me a picture of a hat that says, call Hannity. You know who did call me? Levin. He calls me and says, I'm calling Hannity. And I said, okay, I got it. Everybody thinks they're hilarious. My phone did blow up. And yes, we got a new phone. What are you going to do?
If somebody would call up Sean Hannity.
Enough. That's like playing Obama again and again and Hillary again and again. Screaming. I don't need any of that. Anyway, yeah, that's true. How dare I say that about Trump? It's not the same, but in my ear, it's the same. All right, let's get to our busy telephones as we say hi to Tracy in Texas. Tracy, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hey, what's going on, Sean? Hey, listen, as far as I'm concerned, I watched it, and, you know, Donald Trump lost. And what I think he's doing also is he's about to set himself up for a second loss if no one stops him, because metaphorically, he's ready to open up both barrels against Hillary Clinton. And already he'll be reducing the presidential debate to a reality show. And I think that's really dangerous for him. But I say he lost because she stung him. First, I'm going to say this. With respect to Lester Holt, even though I'm Democrat, I'm more independent, but it did feel like a tilt. I will admit that some of the questions, like, they were stinging him.
Okay, so Hillary gets to say that he's a misogynist, suggest he's a racist, suggest that he's corrupt, that he steals, but Donald Trump can't fight back. Okay, I understand your advice as a liberal Democrat. You don't want Trump. Listen, let me tell you what is going to come up in the next debate, okay? And I can't say I have any insider knowledge. Everyone thinks I have all the insider knowledge in the world. I'm not telling anybody. Everybody wants to know, what does Hannity know? Who does he talk to? You know, the media, it's hilarious, because I walk into the media room the other night, and all the media starts following me because they know where the interviews are going to be. So I'm like trying to help them do their job, and they're like little hangers-on. And I see everybody from CNN and all the big networks. They can't stand it. Anyway, I will tell you that Obamacare will come up, Benghazi will come up, the real state of the economy. I mean, Lester Holt sounded like everything was just lollipops and cotton candy, and it's not. Pay to play, Clinton Foundation, email server, immigration vetting refugees, and by the way, her trashing of women. So listen.
Response.
Donald Trump did what he needed to do the other night, and that is that Donald Trump showed that he could be jabbed and punched and hit and take a punch and respond. But, you know, I don't think that is impacting. That's the entertainment portion of tonight's programming. But the real substance of this election is about, you know, all the statistics that I gave out yesterday and all the people in poverty, on food stamps, on the unemployment lines, out of the labor force that can't buy a house, that are suffering needlessly because of big government that Hillary wants to double down on stupid. And then she wants to double down on a stupid foreign policy that won't vet refugees, that'll put Americans at risk, that won't secure our borders, and a strategy that will literally keep giving the Iranians more of our money. I mean, that's what the election's really about. The educational system that is top-down heavy from Washington, an energy policy that puts coal miners out of work, a healthcare system that's a disaster. So it's really, you know, we can do all the fluff substance and Hillary, look, I give her credit. She memorized her lines. She gets an A-plus for memorizing her lines. A-plus. Anyway, 800-941-SEAN. By the way, you know what was a really cool story? Did you see this? Jason, my sports brother, in his first at bat as a Met.
Oh, dear God.
By the way, is Stephen A. listening? Stephen A., he hears the words Tim Tebow, and he bubble and fizzes like Alka-Seltzer and water. Actually went to to lunch today with my buddy Stephen A's boss. I got in a lot of props for Stephen A in that lunch. Oh, yeah, I was talking Stephen A up big time. Big time. And I said, why don't you let him come on my show? It's the guy who first syndicated my radio show. He now runs ESPN. He's a great guy. He's a total lib, too. I'm like, why is it every time there's a little controversy over at ESPN, you guys fire the people? You guys need to be a little tougher. I mean, I had to stick up for my buddy Stephen A. when he was under fire. It's so stupid. Little controversy, and they panic over at Disney. And I know they used to they syndicated my radio show when I first started. I know that mindset over there. Anyway, first at bat as a Met, bam, boom, right to deep left center field. First shot came from the first pitch of his professional baseball career. It reminded me of The Natural. You ever see that movie with Robert Redford?
Yeah.
You know, Wonder Boy?
You think he's ever going to make the major league team?
I hope to God he does. You know why? Because he's been treated unfairly in his career because of his deep, abiding Christian religious faith, in my opinion. And you know what? There's really a lot worse things in life than believing in Jesus and wanting to be a good person and giving thanks to God for all the blessings you have in your life and actually doing it publicly because you are showing the world what you really believe. Now, I'm a Christian. I'm nowhere near as good as Tim Tebow, but I admire people like Tim Tebow for his faith, and I aspire to be like him because I'm really not that good.
There's also the fact that he's a terrible quarterback. He's terrible.
And when he was with Denver, who was quarterbacking and got them into the championship game?
Oh, here we go.
Who got him into the championship? Who was the quarterback?
He threw one pass in his life. Yes, okay. I know Tim Tebow.
And when they went to overtime, who were they playing against that day?
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
And what happened in overtime in that game?
He threw a winning touchdown pass.
And how long was that winning touchdown pass?
Like 30, 40 yards.
No, I think more like 55 yards, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, let's see. When they had the opportunity to get Peyton Manning, what'd they do with Tebow? What'd they do?
Listen, Peyton Manning is in a class Peyton Manning, let me finish, is in a class of his own, and Peyton Manning was a good acquire by John Elway. John Elway's not dumb, and Tim Tebow, I think, was treated unfairly in the NFL, and I think he could have been. Look, there's nobody that worked harder at becoming a better quarterback than that guy.
Is Bill Belichick a good coach?
I think he is, yeah.
Was Tim Tebow at the New England Patriots?
He did for a short time. He wasn't given a chance. I got Tom Brady. If you have Tom Brady, you don't need anybody else.
Bill Belichick would find uses for Tim Tebow, but Tim Tebow can't throw.
Okay.
He can't throw.
And then how did he win that game against Pittsburgh, that big game that got him into the championship game?
Sean, if you're just going to lean on one throw.
Okay, but I'm saying he's such a horrible.
Mark Sanchez stinks and won four road playoff games. Four. And Mark Sanchez is miserable.
Where's he now?
Dallas.
Yeah, he's with
third
Dallas.
String.
Is he third string?
Behind a rookie.
And that's painful.
Yeah, that's painful.
I'm happy for Tim Tebow, and Godspeed to Tim Tebow. I hope he makes it with the Mets. That's it. I'm just speaking my mind. I admire him. I think he's a great person. I think he's a great role model. You know, there's a lot of people in sports that are not great role models. You want me to start naming them? You know, he's not shooting himself in a nightclub late at night. He's not out there chasing women that anybody knows of. He's not out there doing drugs and getting drunk, and he's not doing, you know, he's a good role model. Why can't we give the guy props?
I'd like to root for him, but
just root for him. He hit a home run. He just hit a home run in his first at bat in the major leagues. You can't even say anything. You're like Stephen A.
He wasn't in the major league team.
Okay.
Charles.
First professional baseball game, he had a home run. Thank you.
He's going to find out how much I'm sure it was different when he's up with real pitchers.
Alexis, Florida on the Sean Hannity Show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's going on?
Good. Well, I wanted to comment on the mess that the Hillary campaign is spewing out right now with Donald Trump and his comments about that former Miss Universe. I compete in the Miss America organization. I'm a current title holder. And so there are different pageant organizations. And I'll be honest, I'm not Trump's biggest fan. I'm a conservative. I used to volunteer for the guy, but probably not voting for him. That's besides the point. I'm disgusted by what the Hillary campaign is doing right now for that pageant organization by allowing this woman to use that as a defense against him. I think it's disgusting because, you know, I don't know if he actually said called her Miss Piggy or Miss Housekeeping. But she breached a contract that she had signed when she won, and whether or not he said those or not, for them to put down...
I'm not sure I believe the woman that in 1998 in Venezuela was accused of driving a getaway car at a murder scene, and the judge in the case said that she threatened to kill him after he indicted the boyfriend for attempted murder. And when asked about this on a program, she just said, well, I have my past. Everybody has, I'm not a saint. Oh, really? Driving a getaway car of a murder scene? I'm not sure I believe that this woman has the credibility that one might think. Now, the fact that the media fell for this, the fact that the media, you know, what would you rather be called? What did Trump, Miss Piggy, or a narcissistic Looney Tune, which Diane Blair, Hillary's friend, wrote about Hillary and credited to Hillary, saying about Monica Lewinsky, an intern that her husband was having an affair with. Never mind the multiple women that accused him of everything from exposing himself, Paula Jones, to groping, grabbing, fondling, touching against her will, like Kathleen Willey, or outright rape, like Juanita Broderick.
Right. Well, you're exactly right. I mean, the fact that her credibility hasn't been called into question is an issue on its own. Well, that's probably the most important issue, and the fact that that's who the Hillary campaign has to call as like a last-ditch attempt to frame him as the misogynist that they would like him to be perceived as. As someone who's in pageants, I just find it completely disgusting.
Listen, pageant life is very brutal. I mean, because everything is based on every single... I mean, you can't have any flaws or imperfections. It's so, to me, I don't understand pageant life. I don't get it.
I'll tell you, you know, Miss America helped pay for my college.
All right, well, I get that. That's kind of cool. All right, I get that. But, you know, I mean, and it's like when they have the question and answer period and they, you know, and the girls will go, well, like, I want to bring about, like, world peace. And I just, you know, it's all contrived. It's sort of like Hillary. I mean, she memorized her line. She's robotic.
Right. It's
that doesn't make you a president to me.
No, I agree with you. And I just for the Hillary campaign to pull, exactly, the person that they did, who was on a murder scene, to use her to put down Trump for something that he may or may not have said over 20 years ago,
well,
is just a desperate attempt.
Look, she threw the kitchen sink at him, and as I've been saying, there's a whole lot of stuff that's going to be coming up in the next couple of debates. Everybody needs to chill. Obamacare will be discussed. Benghazi will be discussed. The real state of the economy will be discussed. Pay to play will be discussed. The Clinton Foundation, the email server, the vetting of refugees, immigration, her Supreme Court justices, her trashing of women. That's all going to be discussed. So, you know, everybody needs to just chill. It's all going to work out in the end. I'm pretty sure of that. Paul is in New York. Thank you, Alexis. Paul, how are you?
Hi, Sean. Hey, I got two quick things for you. I just wanted to say, first of all, I'm a gay conservative. I don't consider myself LGBT. I have a partner of 8 years, and I just want to kind of shout out to all the other fellow gay conservative folks out there. To
I guess there's a lot of them. I mean, don't you feel from in terms of you know, one thing that's frustrated me? All right, so I'm not for changing the definition of marriage, okay? But I'm also fairly libertarian at this point in my life. I don't really care what you do. If you're, I want you to be happy. Life, right. Liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, but you know what bothers me? What? You know, the gay and lesbian community will criticize Hannity for not supporting gay marriage or changing the definition. But isn't it Sean Hannity that keeps pointing out that Hillary takes money from countries that kill gays and lesbians?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the thing is, I guess my point is I'm seeing. I'm voting for Trump, and I'm not going to change my opinion on that because most LGBT people are not doing that. But the reason I'm doing that is because religious liberties are being infringed upon. We can't have liberties and infringe other people's liberties. It has to be kind of an equal for deal, and that's kind of what I'm upset about with the whole LGBT community about is. My kind of people infringing the rights of others, and I just don't think it's right. And the only other thing I wanted to say real quick was next time Trump,
gets asked about his taxes from Hillary, he should tell her that he emailed them to her.
You're not the first person that told me that today. That would be a great... Well, Hillary, I emailed them to you. You should have them in your email. It's a great idea. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunities that I think will come up. I think Trump needed to get his footing in the first debate, and I think he did very well. That's my honest take. And I think that he had the right tone and cadence and temperament for the debate, and I think that's why the polls are where they are. I think everybody saw it. I mean, you can't look at that debate. And look, I think you can only give Hillary props for two things, showing up and not falling down. And number two, she memorized her lines that were written by somebody else. You know, short of that, you know, what's she running on? What does she stand for? How's she going to fix the economy? She doesn't even recognize the economy's a mess. Higher taxes, more regulation? No thanks. I don't want that.
Hey, if you want a firearm that is easy to transport, you got to check out the U.S. Survival Rifle from our friends at Henry Repeating Arms. Now, it is a portable rifle that you can put together, take apart in just minutes. And then when you're not using it, you can store the parts in the little case that it comes in. It's so small, you can store it pretty much anywhere. And it's light enough to carry everywhere. Now it comes in black and two different camo patterns, and you can pick one up for $300 to $400 depending on the finish. Check out their videos. Go to their website. It's one word, henryusa.com/survival. And while you're there, make sure you order their free catalog. Now, Henry makes more than 200 rifles and shotguns and revolvers, all made in America, all backed by a lifetime satisfaction guarantee and the best customer service in the business. Go to their website, henryusa.com. Get their free catalog. They'll send you free decals and a list of dealers where you are. That's henryusa.com. Free catalog decals for the Henry U.S. Survival Rifle. You know, since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, they have been committed to improving the lives of Americans' vets, first responders, and their families. Now, for over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Now, Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children. They build specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured vets and is working to eradicate veteran homelessness. Now, Dave Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. Now, he has never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting our vets, first responders, and their families, and there are so many of them that need our help. Please join the foundation on their mission to do good and never forget. Just commit $11 a month. You can do it by going to their website, the letter T, the number 2, the letter T.org. That's the letter T, the number 2, the letter T.org. Hey, consider more fun, more fitness, and more relaxation for much less with the Michael Phelps Swim Spa by our friends at Master Spas. Now with up to $2,000 off with their global sales event this month. Now it's more than a hot tub. It offers hydrotherapy, comfortable seating, and a spacious swimming area for convenient exercise. Now, it's built right here in the U.S. Just go to masterspas.com. You can get up to $2,000 off. Make sure to use the promo code Hannity in the upper right-hand corner. Exercise, relax, recover with the only hot tub and swim spa brand that I trust, masterspas.com.